An American, a Canadian, and a Brit walk into a bar. But this isn't a bad joke. This is Ladies of Valhalla.
Welcome to Ladies of Valhalla. My name is Sarah and I'll be your host today. I'd like to welcome you all to this latest member of the Talking Comics podcast family. This month we'll be taking a dive into Noelle Stevenson's award-winning webcomic turned graphic novel, Nimona. But first off, please allow me to introduce my wonderful co-hosts. In alphabetical order, we have the Helen of Troy of hydration testing, the Baba Yaga of ball hockey, the Luna of Lego, it's Lady B herself, Ms. Bronwyn Kelly Say.
Oh, hello, Sarah. Thank you.
And sitting to the other metaphorical side of me is the Wonder Woman of Warcraft, the Lamia of Logos, the Demeter of Dashens, the wonderful Lady J, Ms. Jessica Schaefer. How are we today, ladies?
Lovely. How do you come up with those? That's a fantastic.
My stepdaughter studying classics.
I love it so much. That's amazing. And thank you, Bella.
Thanks, Bella.
I literally just go, I need a goddess with an L and a mythical figure with a B. Off you go.
I love it. It's amazing. That's fantastic. I feel very good about myself all of a sudden.
Yeah. I just maybe don't look up who Baba Yaga is, that's all.
Oh, no, I'm quite familiar with Baba Yaga, actually.
I was slightly worried you might be insulted by that one, but
I just ran with it. I like it. I'm going to run with it. Fear me.
I do.
I think I probably smiled too much for Baba Yaga, but still.
I'm sure she was happy on the inside.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. So, as I mentioned, we are going to look at Nimona this week. I thought the best way for us to start off would just be to read the blurb off the back of the book. It's there for a reason. So here goes. Nimona is an impulsive young shapeshifter with a knack for villainy. Lord Ballister Blackheart is a villain with a vendetta. As a sidekick and supervillain, Nimona and Lord Blackheart are about to wreak some serious havoc. Their mission? Prove to the kingdom that Sir Ambrosius Goldenloin and his buddies at the Institution of Law Enforcement and Heroics aren't the heroes everyone thinks they are. Nemesis, dragons, science, symbolism. All these and more await in this brilliantly subversive, sharply irreverent epic from Noelle Stevenson based on her award-winning webcomic. So, if we just throw out some general impressions first, anybody that listened to our first episode will know that I absolutely love this book. So, Jess, what are your general impressions on Nimona? Like it? Hate it? Where do you stand on the book? Not literally, don't stand on books. That's a terrible thing to do.
Well, I have stood on books because I am so short. We discussed this before. So it's not good. They're not really that steady. Don't recommend it. Anyway.
All the way.
Oh, yeah, step stools are fantastic. But if you can't get one, you know, sometimes you have to improvise. I love this book. My general impression was I thought this was fantastic. I had an idea of it. I had not read it before, but I had an idea. People have talked about it. I've seen, like, the webcomics and stuff like that. I absolutely loved it. It was great. I thought it was fantastic.
Yay.
Awesome. What about you, Bronwyn?
I have read it before, and I loved it just as much the second time reading it through as I did the first time. Maybe more, actually, because I think you get more out of it the second read through. Just having already absorbed the material once, you get to see some of the details maybe that you lost the first time. I really enjoyed it. I love the characters. I like the twists. I like the... A lot of that is said in the back in the blurb with the sort of subversive style of the writing, the idea of the hero and the anti-hero and who is actually the big bad, sort of playing with that and putting that idea on its head. I really I like that. I really enjoyed the way it was played with in this story, and just the presentation of it is a lot of fun. So yeah, I really enjoy Nimona. It's a very entertaining read.
Awesome. It seems that a lot of people agree with us. I had a quick look on Goodreads earlier. It's had 67,000 ratings and over 8,000 reviews. And it's actually averaging out at 4.2 out of 5, which is pretty good for Goodreads. And it won an award for Best Webcomic in 2012. It was nominated in the 2015 Eisner Awards and the National Book Awards, and it won the Harvey Award in 2013 for the Best Online Comics Work. So really well received, obviously loved by a lot of people. So it seemed like a good idea for us to talk about it. Obviously, if you haven't read the book at this point, please go and read it. Because we are going to be talking spoilers. Just press pause and then come back to us. You know, it is available where all good books are sold and in comic book shops and, you know, those online retailers that we shouldn't mention. But we are going to be talking...
And audiobook.
Yes. Yeah. Tell me about the audiobook.
I listened to it a second time around. I didn't know it was on audiobook until I bought the hard copy of it. I had seen it on the website and watched while I read it digitally, and then I was like, I want a hard copy of this. So I bought a hard copy, and then I was like, if you're interested in this, you can also get it on Audible. And I was like, really? I'm like, a webcomic on Audible? And it was absolutely adorable because the whole thing is done with a cast. It's not read by one person. A lot of the audiobooks are read by one person, which still are very good. But this has a full cast, a full original score. It's great. Yeah, and so it's really nice to listen to. It's a little hard because you don't have the imagery there. But, you know, if you have a good imagination or if you have a child that has a good imagination, I'd go for it. It was just as lovely on audiobook as it was reading it physically. You know, it's great.
That sounds cool. Awesome. We're going to come back to the idea of a full cast in a bit as well, because there's something happening in the future with Nimona. So we'll come back to that one. First of all, I want to talk about something that Noelle Stevenson herself brought up about the book. She's quite active on Twitter. She is very open about her life and some of the struggles that she maybe has. I think a lot of that is reflected in the book. But one thing that she did say a little while back on Twitter was that she saw Nimona on a list of horror comics in a local library, and that surprised her. How would either of you ladies categorise Nimona? I personally wouldn't have called it horror. I can think of a lot of other categories I put it in, but how would you categorise it if you had to do so?
For me, I it was funny, actually. One of the things I liked most about this story is that it doesn't easily fit into a particular mold. I can really understand why Noelle Stevenson was surprised by the horror tag, because I wouldn't categorize it that way either. But that being said, I'm not 100% surprised by that tag either. There is some fighting and some quote-unquote, big air quote, monsters.
Oh no, there are definitely some monsters here.
You know, things like that. So... you know, I suppose I can understand that tag, though I wouldn't use it myself. So I guess for me, I feel it falls into a few categories. Like, you know, you could call it YA. There's sort of hero, anti-hero epic. There's a redemption arc. I almost would categorize it as like a coming of age. And there's I think my potentially weirdest categorization for this one, and you're just gonna have to help me run with this, is almost a buddy cop vibe.
I totally get that.
If you can get that from a story entirely devoid of cops and ostensibly told from a big bad perspective, like,
yeah. I can see where you're going with that one.
It's like good cop, bad cop. I get what you're saying. Like, it has that vibe. I'm backing you up on that. I'm with you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, ultimately, it's a story about friendship and what friendship means and how it develops and how it changes a person. So I think it kind of defies categorization to some degree, but there are definitely multiple categories it would go into. But I think horror is probably the least of them for me.
What about you, Jess?
Yeah, no, I feel the same. I mean, I kind of get where, I think what gets it put into the horror category is, like you said, the monsters, and then maybe some of the scenes at the end where she's, like, rampaging through the city, like, you know, or the part of her is rampaging through the city, like, killing everybody. Like, I could see that, like, maybe that's where they're getting the horror aspect. I really don't think it's a horror at all. I don't know. I'm just trying to, like, figure out where someone got that, where they would put that in there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a horror. I think if you want to go general, you're talking like sci-fi fantasy. You know what I mean? That it's a mix. It's a good mix of the two. Like Bronwyn said, I think it's definitely, you know, it could be YA, a definitely coming of age story. Not, you know, even a romance. Okay, you can put in a romance before you put it in horror. I feel, you know, like I just don't. I don't know where the horror is coming from. I mean, maybe it could. It could be a little scary if you're too young. Maybe they're talking for, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I think there's a lot of other things that it could be before horror.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, friendship, romance, sci-fi, fantasy. Like you said, it could be, you know, buddy cop type stuff. But yeah, yeah, so.
Yeah. It's definitely got a lot more of all those other elements for me than horror. I mean, when I say there are monsters in it, they're not the things that look scary, you know, the monsters are there. But I just read it as a fantasy adventure with some sci-fi elements thrown in, and maybe as a coming of age story. I don't get horror from it at all. It didn't scare me. It didn't make me jump. It didn't disturb me. I can see why Stevenson was confused and surprised by that. Because it's, horror means something very definite to me, and it's not what I'm getting from Nimona. But,
No, I mean, it says right on the cover, like, the first pull quote right on the cover is, full of humor and heart.
Yes.
Doesn't scream horror.
Yeah, it's not full of humor and hearts that have been ripped out of people's chests. That would be horror.
I mean, horror can be funny. There can be humor, you know, and
100%.
Yeah, but I'm with you. I think someone was confused. Someone had a little rough day, maybe.
And perhaps somebody missed the point.
Yes, you know? I think maybe it was just lazy categorization by somebody who just sort of flicked through the book and perhaps hadn't actually read it and went, there's some violence, there's some swords, let's just throw it in the horror section. But maybe that's just me being slightly pessimistic. One of the categories that I think we all mentioned was sort of the kind of fantasy, sci-fi sort of element. And one thing that I really noticed within the book is that there is a science versus magic thread that kind of goes through the whole narrative. Which side do you think comes out best? Jess, I'm going to ask you first because I know that you like sci-fi and fantasy and dragons. So I'm assuming that you're going to come out on one side rather than the other, and I'm assuming Bronwyn's going to come out on the opposite side to you. And now you're just going to ruin that for me and burst my bubble, aren't you?
So, I mean, I think that, I don't know if it's science versus magic so much, but I know that, you know, like, on the magic end, you have her shape-shifting and all of that, and that kind of has a little bit more positive light. They do kind of put a little negativity to the science side, because, you know, the Institute is really, like, for science, and obviously, you know, they're not exactly lovely. So, you know, I do tend to go on the magic side of it, because I think they put that in more of a fun light. I don't know how to explain it. And I don't know if one was necessarily better than the other, but I do think maybe the magic outweighed it a little bit more because of how kind of sometimes negative they made the science part with the Institute.
What about you, Bronwyn? Do you kind of lean one way or the other?
Yes.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure. I saw this question and I knew what you were going for on this one.
Subtle, wasn't it?
It was very subtle, Sarah. You're very good.
Thanks. I'm gonna keep that one.
I actually wrote this question down as science versus magic, who wore it better? you know, like, as a scientist who's always, like, I love sci-fi fantasy. I've always loved sci-fi fantasy. And I have actually been more of a fantasy than a sci-fi fan, if I'm being 100% honest. Because I've always sort of dreamed of having a little magic in my life, even though I am definitely a scientist. So I've always been a little conflicted, and I think that that conflict is reflected in this story. So I kind of related, you know?
Mm.
And I think ultimately both sides show their darker natures in the telling of Nimona and Ballister's stories. You know, at their hearts, it seems like science is really just about trying to understand, and magic is really about knowing that sometimes you can't have all of the answers, and that needs to be okay.
Oh, that was deep. I like that.
Yeah, you went real deep with it.
Yeah.
you know, because, like, the Institute is definitely the negative side of science, you know, and of really sort of abusing that, the power of trying to understand, and of people wanting to feel safe and having answers and things like that. But then, you know, there's also Dr. Blitzmeyer, who is maybe showing the sort of more pure heart of science, of really just understanding for the sake of understanding, you know. She was not trying to hurt anybody or abuse that power in any way. And with Nimona, you see the pure side of the magic with her shape-shifting and her joy in it, and her not needing to understand where it came from to understand that it's real and it's powerful and it's natural. But then you see the darker side of that, where she's losing control and hurting people.
Yeah.
So both sides are really shown that you can have both and balance between them, but you really do need to strive for that balance, and you do really need to strive for that control, right? So
yeah, I can definitely
comes down to, like, the balance of good and evil, almost, you know, like, mm-hmm. really, like, everything for, you know, for every action has a reaction, for, you know, there's always that good and bad in both elements. So,
and so I really liked it because it did definitely, to me anyway, play to that conflict and show both sides of it, which I like.
Yeah, I think one thing for me that really stood out, obviously you have both sides. You've got the Institute, who are going to use any means necessary to do what they want, and then you've got Nimona, who doesn't really understand what collateral damage is. But then in the middle, you've got Dr. Blitzmeyer. And I love the fact that she actually has on her business cards, magical scientist, not a witch.
Yes.
And the fact that, not a witch, definitely not a witch. I need business cards that say I'm a magical scientist, not a witch. But the fact that she is firmly positioned in that central point, saying, yes, science can be good or bad, and yes, magic can be good or bad, but the winner is both and also neither, because Blitzmeyer's, you know, one for either side of the fence there. And she's actually one of my favourite characters. She only appears in, like, 20 panels.
Which is great.
She's fantastic.
But she is. She's absolutely brilliant.
She's chaotic neutral right there, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that fact about her. And obviously she, even though she appears only a few times, she is a major catalyst to what eventually happens in the story. And that comes back to something you both mentioned about the magic, which is Nimona shape-shifting. I actually bothered to sit and write out all of the different things that she shape-shifts into. Because I need to get out more, apparently. Because, you know, it's...
Oh, vindication! It's not me who overprepared this time!
There you go.
Drat.
Yes!
Thanks for that.
I'm the only one with 14 pages of notes now.
Actually, I've only got 3 pages of notes.
That's still less than me.
But they are still quite complex. She shapeshifts in the whole book, and I was surprised that it's only 14 different creatures that she turns into, and 4 different human shapes. And that surprised me, because I thought going through the book it was a lot more than that. And one thing I didn't notice until probably my 3rd read through of this is the first time that we see Nimona shapeshift, she turns into a shark. Which is cool, because who doesn't want to be a shark? But did you notice that she's a shark with boobs?
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't. But I do have the book in front of me.
I'm so totally looking at that.
I don't think it's every panel that she's a shark. I think it's maybe just in one of them. So she kind of, she appears behind him and it's like shark, shark. And then you get like two panels of boob shark.
Yep. Boob shark.
Which
oh
is
God.
Just the weirdest thing. So
I mean, boob sharks are cool though.
Obviously, Nimona loves her dragon form. She keeps coming back to it over and over and again. And I'm pretty sure that we can all guess, anyone who's ever listened to Talking Comics can guess what Jess is going to say here. But if you could shapeshift, what would your go-to shape be? I'm going to go to Bronwyn first because, Jess, if you don't tell me the right answer, I'm just going to cry.
Seriously. I mean, you know, I think Nimona and obviously Jess are probably onto something with dragon. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, in an effort to be different, I think probably I would be interested in, you know, having like a Pegasus form or, you know, like a big cat, like a lynx or something. You know, that'd be
lion
really...
cat. You could be lion cat.
Oh my God, I'm lion cat. I'm totally lion cat. Hell yes, I'm lion cat.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh my God. Lying. Oh. Yes. Yes. That just happened.
That's yeah, okay. I was just gonna say a cat. You've just made my average basic cats look really boring. I quite liked the idea of sleeping a lot and being fed. But lion cat beats that. Disappointment reigns. Jess is going to turn around now and say she wants to be a dead horse and just ruin everything for everyone.
Dead horses. I actually saw live horses on
it's
vacation.
So casual,
I put pictures
God.
Of them. I put them on my, what you call it, my Instagram because I thought, you know, live horses need love too. But...
There's a hashtag for you.
But, you know, you guys know what I'm going to say. I'm going to be a dragon. I'm going to always be a dragon, okay? I'm breathing fire down on everyone and I'm going to be a dragon. All right. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
We all knew what we were saying. Actually, what did I write down? I wrote that in my notes. Where am I? What you call it? Oh, I lost it.
Your notes don't just say duh.
A dragon. A dragon, do we need to ask questions?
All right. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. Wow. I put sensible things like cat. Horse, songbird, because I thought it'd be nice to actually be able to sing decently. Anyone who's ever heard me sing will know why that would be quite an achievement for me. It's a horror show.
Oh no.
Oh yeah, yes.
So clearly you need to come over so we can do karaoke.
The first time I ever did karaoke, my dad stood at the back of the bar making wolf howling noises in an attempt to drown me out. I was that bad.
Oh, muffin.
It has not gotten any better since. Oh. And it doesn't stop me though. Don't worry about that. It does not stop me. I sing constantly. My workmates think it's hilarious. I pull up, I've got the windows down because my aircon's broken, belting out some show tunes, and they're like, oh God, she's here again.
I like it.
Yeah,
I sing everything I want, so I don't think I'm a very good singer myself either, but I just sing normal conversations, like I will sing to people like, I need you to approve this, you know, like, I will just walk through the office and sing like things because, you know, my job is very interesting, so I need to keep things happy for myself. we'll say it nicely. I need to keep things happy for myself.
So oh my God.
I just sing like blatant
so happy
tab.
To hear that you also sing at work. My office mate and I sing to each other all the time. Hey there, buddy. What do you need now?
When things are going really bad, I like to sing, I hate everyone, throughout the entire office. Like, I just... If I sing it, it doesn't sound as bad.
That's the best way to casually insult somebody. Just serenade them with the insults.
Hate you all.
That's brilliant. We have a weird tendency in my office to break out some Spice Girls. I'm not quite sure where it comes from. But yeah, me and my buddy that sits on my desk next to me, every now and again, he'll be like, stop, right now! And then about four people will just throw the next line out. It's just bizarre. Yeah, who knows?
So
who knows?
Good.
Anyway, reining it back to Nimona, because that was quite an epic level tangent we just went down.
Bring it back. We'll bring it back in.
Let's ask, yeah, let's ask a sensible question. Everyone stop listening now, it's fine. Let's ask a sensible question about literature. Obviously, Nimona started off as a webcomic. So the way that we are reading it, assuming you are reading it as a book, is slightly different from the way it was originally produced. You're not having to wait for the next instalment. And I think one thing about reading a webcomic as a book is that you can really see the development of the art and the writing. And I know that certainly I noticed, especially with the panels, when you start the book, the backgrounds are very simple, figures that aren't the main characters are quite sort of uniform, and as it goes on, I don't know if either of you ladies noticed this, but the panels get so much more complex and the backgrounds get really, really dense and intense, and there's so much light and shadow by the end of the book. Like, for sort of two entire chapters, you never see one of the two main characters without, or the two main male characters without shadow across their face. Did you notice that, or is that just me being barking?
No, 100%. I absolutely noticed. Yeah, it was almost as if there was a significant increase in confidence by the end of the book. You know, like, even to some degree, the writing style, like, just there's more confidence in the dialogue. But definitely in the art, there was more color as well, I think. I mean, color was a significant theme through the whole thing, which I know we'll get into a little bit later, but it seemed a little bit more saturated. There was a little bit more, I don't know, more application of color. There was more depth to it. You know, like, it just, there, yeah, there was, it was, you know, where you might have, like, 8 colors in the panels in the first, in the beginning, you might have, like, 16, 24.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
By the end, so it just seemed like there was much more confidence by the end, you know.
But if we sort of stick with that color, because obviously I know that you love color and you see colors very vibrantly. Obviously, Jess, you're a designer and you're an artist, so if we kind of stick with the art and the color, how did you see that? Did you get the same sort of impression that we've had of this sort of development of confidence and development of skill as an artist yourself? Is that how it came across to you?
100%. And, like, that's a very normal thing, especially, like, as an artist. And when you do something, you know, it's that, you know, when you start and you start, you know, as you go, and any artist will tell you, you always improve. Okay, when you do something all the time and do it repetitively, like, you improve upon it. So, and that's going to happen with comics and writing and anything of that nature. And you could definitely say, like, the confidence is there, the coloring is there, it's becoming comfortable with those characters that you draw all the time as well. Too, like, that's a big thing. If you start, you know, the first couple ones you draw, that's the first time you're drawing those characters. Like, yes, maybe you have, you know, concept art and sketches and stuff like that, but, like, that's the first, you know, time you're really drawing them to be put out to the public. So the more you do that, the more comfortable you're going to become naturally, just with any kind of art. It works the same way even with design. Like, you know, the first time I made a flyer, I was like, I hope this is good. Now I can bust them out in 2 hours, you know? And that's the other thing is speed. Quickness with doing stuff like that. So it may take, in the beginning, it might have taken her, you know, a certain amount of time to do one panel. So, you know, you kind of have to, you know, work under time constraints as well. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, she may have been able to add in, you know, more detail in a shorter amount of time. So
that
that's
makes sense.
Yeah, that's a big thing as well. And I do think, you know, I love the way this book is colored and the way it's utilized. So you can 110% see the improvement, the shadows that occur. Like you said there's a shadow across their face, and by the end, it's the shadows make a huge difference in art, period. So
very
shadows
much.
Are always, yeah, so shadowing and good shadowing is always going to make you go like, oh wow. And that's what I think really catches the eye, is the backgrounds are obviously way more detailed and the shadows are also way more detailed. But yeah.
Yeah. Sticking with the colour, one thing that I absolutely love about the book was not just the way the palette develops, but also the I don't know the technical term for this. I've called it multi-tonal single colour palettes. That's a really complex way of saying she just uses shades. When you have the flashbacks to like little Nimona, who by the way is adorable, and I just want to hug her.
Seriously.
So cute. When you're in flashback mode and she's talking about her childhood, the way that Stevenson actually colours those little panels, you know, it's all sort of peachy tones with a little hint of red. I just think it's absolutely beautiful, and really, really puts you into this sort of story within a story, because, you know, it picks up on her hair colour that she's got at the time, what she's wearing, and just sort of drags it through. Is that something that you picked up on as colour fanatics and designers, or am I just, you know, going off on a tangent again?
100%. And it's monochromatic is like the technical term when you use like whole shades of one color.
I just assumed that meant black or white.
No. It's just when you use like when it's the same tonal variation.
Thank you.
So yeah, no, I think it's great. I love the coloring of this because it is very monochromatic, but she uses a pop color. So a lot of times, like anything that's colored brightly against the other tones is important, you know, and it it stands out. And a lot of things, not just in comics, like that's a very common thing to do. Like even like major corporations will use this in their marketing. Good examples are McDonald's, Burger King. They use red because they feel that when you see the color red, it makes you want to eat more and it makes you hungry. Okay. Huh. So yeah. So when you go
did
into
not know
store,
that.
Yes, when you go into McDonald's, you see a lot of red, and there's a lot of red and the yellow, or they say the contrast, I guess, between the red and the yellow, make you hungry, so they make you think of food.
I just assumed it was meant to be ketchup and mustard.
No, that's why if you look, a lot of fast food places use the color red. Wendy's, McDonald's, they all use that red in there because they say that it's going to make you, you know, buy more food when you go into their establishment. So, you know, when you look at these pages, and so like you mentioned that like it had that like kind of creamy like pink and like and made you feel as if you were, you know, looking back into a memory. Mm. So color is really, you know, and it really works out. And she definitely has, you know, even if you look at like Golden Lion, he's all done in like yellow and his hair is blonde and flowing. Like that yellow kind of gives you that like kind of regal like grandeur. Like purple can also do the same thing for you, you know. I definitely thought it had a big impact on the book and the way she colored it. So
well, yeah, and I think the saturation level too, right? Like the sort of flashback ones are more muted tones, and the more you know, intense scenes are more vibrant. So like there's the emotional connectivity of that emotional intensity can be conveyed in the level of saturation in the color.
Especially in the final battle with the greens and the yellows being really vibrant, and then the dragon form being so black and the cloak being so red, it really, you know, it pulls you into the intensity of it.
Yeah, and I think you made a note of this, Sarah, too, but like I love the fact that the colors seem to mean specific things in the story as well. So it brings you into a specific feeling of it, right? Where like the green color for sort of more of the clinical cold scenes, and the red wash for more of the emotional hot scenes. So like the green and more associated with the Institute, or not even just the Institute, but where the sort of rational thinking, quote unquote,
like when they're in Blackheart's laboratory, he's got all the green screens around.
Yes, exactly. But also when Ballister has to shoot the dragon half of Nimona at the end, you know, he has to make a really clinical call, you know, and it hurts him, and it's very painful. It's not like it's not an emotional scene, but it's the rational part of his mind having to override the emotional side.
Yes,
right?
Yes, very much so.
As opposed to the more emotional fight scenes where, you know, against Golden Lion, where Nimona is doing a lot of shape-shifting and things like that, where it's more of that sort of impulsive side.
Yeah, I sort of with Blackheart and Golden Lion, what you said, Jess, about his hair, I noticed that with the hair on all sort of the main characters as well. Like everything to do with the director is really muted and sort of darker tones and quite shadowy. Whereas Golden Loin, he's literally the golden child.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Black Heart's
glowing.
Yeah. And then Black Heart's dark and mysterious and gloomy, and he's got the little bad guy beard thing going on.
Yeah.
And then Blitzmeyer, she's got white hair. And the first time I read it, I didn't really pay any attention to that. But she's the neutral one in the middle. She's the one that branches between the science and the magic and the sort of the fantasy and the reality. So she's just sort of the neutral party. And then obviously you've got Nimona, who's just singular because she's amazing.
Yeah. And she sort of defies all the categories, right?
She's kind of changeable within it. Which nicely, actually, segue, brings me on to another question I asked you ladies, which was to do with the hair colour change. Obviously, halfway or so through the book, it's chapters 8 and 9 for those of you reading along at home, Nimona changed their hair colour. And I personally found this really significant. And obviously, I've mentioned the association that you two ladies have with colour. How did you find the hair colour change, Bronwyn? How did you kind of... Because I know that you, like me, you like to change your hair colour quite a lot and make it quite funky. So how did you see Nimona's change within the story?
Like you, I thought it was pretty significant. It was kind of an emotional gut punch for me. It was like an act of defiance in the face of a terrifying loss of control. You know, like she had this sort of violating experience where something had come in and it had taken away something from her, with where she had lost control over her power, you know, like this was somebody had come in and taken her power away without her consent, you know. That's a violation, and her immediate response to this was to say, no, I have my power back, you know. And that act of defiance was the hair color change. So it was a small act of defiance given the scale of her abilities, but it was powerful, I think, you know.
Definitely. What about you, Jess?
Pretty much on the same page. I feel within myself, I change my hair color a lot when I feel that I don't have control of the situation that I'm in. I think it is a thing of control. You can control your hair color. You can control that. That is, and when you're in a spot where you have lost control, like she has lost the control to control her own powers, you need something that can like ground you and say, no, I'm still in control of this. I'm still in control of myself. And a lot of times, and I know for a lot of women, and men, I shouldn't just say women, you know, changing your physical appearance makes you feel like, yes, I still have control over myself. I have control
Absolutely.
Over something.
Yeah. One thing I also noticed with it is before she changes the hair, when she's got sort of the orangey red hair, she's quite joyous and she's quite happy. And, you know, she's all excited about working with Blackheart and she's like, yeah, I'm going to take over the world. And then afterwards, I found that she becomes quite sort of withdrawn and more leaning towards kind of the revenge aspect. And then for me, that was quite significant because... as you say, it is something that she has control over, and maybe it is representative of the fact that the change in herself is emotional as well as physical. She's just showing that physical change to the world by saying, this is my appearance, I am a different person now, I am not who you thought I was, which may just be me reading too much into it, but I've had a lot of different hair colours in my time. And yeah, it can be quite emotional.
That's a really interesting perspective on it. I like that.
Also, I thought the one interesting is when you see her, I'm doing air quotes now, her real form, literally air quoting, little bunny ears at the mic. When you see her in her real form, you know, when she's the scared little girl and she's been trapped at the Institute and she's just sitting there in like just like a little white t-shirt and she's got long brown normal hair. I just find that really interesting when she doesn't have the control over the shape-shifting part of herself and it's been pulled out of her, she just looks like she could be any of the townspeople. And for me that was quite significant because it shows, you know, obviously so much of her personality is displayed through her hair. Even though she's adorable, it made me sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I get sad quite easily about books.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're like, as I said before, an emotional gut punch, right? Like, this is somebody going right from their brain into your brain via words, right?
Mm. So. As, and even more so with you know, something like Nimona, where you can actually see it.
Exactly.
Sequential art, that's what I'm trying to say. But if we go back to the question that I sort of really came on, where I was talking about the art and the writing developing, obviously we've talked a lot about the art and the colour and how that quite significantly changed in the book. But I also found that the themes became a lot more complex as the book went on. And obviously that sounds pretty self-explanatory. The books kept going, the themes will be more complex. But that doesn't always necessarily happen. You only have to look at some superhero books that have run for 40 years and they're still telling the same story they were 40 years ago. But the depth of the character relationships and the way that each character has their own voice and very clearly has their own voice as well, I found that quite interesting, because obviously at the beginning the speech bubbles were a lot smaller, there was a lot less vocabulary in them. Is that me as an English student seeing that, or did you ladies kind of pick up on that as well?
Yeah, I definitely saw something like that as well. It was nice to see that the story, because the story initially comes across as something that could develop into something complex like that, but you didn't know where it was going to go, right?
Mm.
Especially because, as you say, at the beginning, the speech bubbles are relatively small and don't necessarily display that level of complexity. But to see that it had that potential and then more than followed through on it, I think it was really satisfying. You know, like so the story in itself was satisfying, and then the development of the story was satisfying. So I think it was especially a good read because you get that on a couple of levels.
Yeah. I think that progresses right along with the art. You know, I think it goes kind of, if you look, it almost goes exactly with the art. As the art progresses, you can see that complexity of writing go along with it. So it's good. It's a nice flow too. It doesn't like abruptly change. It just kind of nicely flows into a more complex story. So
And it's certainly something that I had to read it twice before I was picking up on things like that. Like the first time I blew through it, I was just like, this is awesome, I love Nimona.
That should have just been the entirety of the podcast.
So I mean, to be fair, I was not super analytical about this the first time I read it.
We will forgive you, don't worry.
You know, like, she's cool, I love her hair, look, dragons!
I did a lot of that the first time too, so don't feel bad. I had a little bit of a conversation with Dan before we got on the podcast this morning, just to like kind of like, all right, let me talk about this in a serious manner and not be like, whoa, dragons! Yeah, dragons! I want to be a dragon! You know,
about dragons.
I'm always excited about dragons.
I have this really complex conversation about a story that deserves that, because this is a really great story. You know, like there's a lot of depth here. There's a lot of character development here. There's a lot of, you know, there. It's not just a straightforward hero epic where you know, have the battles they have to overcome and then they achieve their, you know, goal and they get their whatever they need at the end of the story or whatever. It's not that. It's so much better than that because you have multiple character arcs happening at the same time. You have character arcs for people who are both positive and negative, and they're allowed to be both positive and negative. You have you do have like a big bad, but they're actually relatively minor character in the telling of the story. Everybody seems to be a little bit more complicated, which is nice and relatable, and people are allowed to be flawed, and that's cool. And the story ends well-ish, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's a very complicated ending, which is nice because they are.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially one of the characters that I actually wrote more notes about than anyone else was actually Blackheart rather than Nimona.
Exactly.
Because he actually seems like a really decent chap. And, you know, he tries to keep Nimona in check. But then as it goes on, you're sort of thinking, this guy is the villain of the piece. We know he's the bad guy. Why is he saying, I'm not going to try and steal the crown. I'm not going to kill the king. I don't kill bystanders. And then you find out about this so-called accident that pushed him into that bad guy position. Because as society has told us all, you can't have a deformed hero. You can't be a cripple and a hero. And I just found him to be really interesting from that perspective.
Yeah.
The, what he does for the townspeople, or tries to do for the townspeople, that Golden Loin and the Institute, more the Institute than Golden Loin, the Institute are just like, meh, they're just people. They'll get over it, whatever.
Yeah.
And especially his relationship with Golden Loin, the way that that develops, and that they're sort of sneaking off to have their little meeting. And it's like, even though Blackheart's the one that got pushed out, it's like he's still trying to save his best friend. Even though his best friend is supposedly the hero of the piece. You know, he's the golden child. He's got the long flowing hair and the love of the people. But he's the one that kind of needs saving.
Very much so.
I also found it quite sweet that he's only got three contacts on his phone.
I know.
It's like, oh, one of them blew your arm off and one of them fired you and one of them's Nimona. But, oh,
but then
bless.
He gets the four. That's awesome.
That's what it does, though. It kind of makes him endearing, you know?
Yeah. It does. And I kind of wonder, would he be as interesting if he hadn't lost the arm? You know, what would his relationship with Golden Loin be like? Would they even have a relationship? Would, you know, because obviously you couldn't have two champions of the people. That's made very clear. You know, how would they have gotten around that in any other way? So, yeah, I don't know what sort of either of you thought of that, but
I mean, I think Blackheart was an interesting character regardless. So I think he would be interesting, but I think it would have been a very, very, very different character. Because I think, as true of us all, tragedy had a giant impact on his trajectory as a person. You know, and you know, it forces introspection, it forces growth, and it isn't always in a positive direction, but it can be. You know, and it was in this case, and it forces perspective, because like this is what showed him who the Institute actually was.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, definitely.
But, you know, in getting to know the Blackheart character, we find out that he is a thoughtful person. We find out that, you know, he is an observant person. So would he have seen who the Institute was anyway? Maybe. But also, maybe he would have been turned into the evil villain that he was supposed to be, and the evil villain that he was presented as originally, you know? Like, if he ended up being the golden child of the Institute, that he would have been if he had not been injured, the roles might have been thoroughly reversed, and Golden Loin would have been the bad guy, and Blackheart would have been the golden boy. But Blackheart as the golden boy might have actually been evil, you know,
and
in
also,
a way that
would,
Golden Loin wasn't.
Yeah, would Golden Loin have had the moral compass that Blackheart has?
Definitely as we've seen, you know. So I think the whole situation would have been very, 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 very bad.
Definitely. That's something that to me really showed how Stevenson managed to develop her writing skills and the characters and the plot as it went along. And for me, he was one of the most interesting of like the main characters.
Very, very much.
And also their relationship between them. It's complex, but to me there's a very clear undertone that they had either a previous romantic relationship or they wanted to have a romantic relationship. And there's that always that undercurrent going through. Maybe that's just me. But then there's...
Yeah, I think it's just you.
That's good to know. But then when you get the epilogue, and it's almost like they're kind of rekindling it when you see them in the garden and he's helping him walk. I just found that really sweet as a way of kind of wrapping everything up. You know, we know that maybe Nimona isn't what she was, but she's okay. And maybe there is something positive in the future for Blackheart. now that he's not necessarily the villain of the story.
I mean, we call him the villain, but was he ever really the villain? You know, I think he was made out to be the villain, but like, it's clear that, you know, like you said, like that event had had an impact on him and changed and made him look inside himself and it changed him. And he clearly had morals and, you know, he wouldn't kill innocents and he didn't want to take the crown. He just kind of wanted his revenge per se. But I wonder if when he says revenge, if he just really wanted to, how do you say it, kind of be near Golden Loin. Like, that was part of, like, that's what he could do to kind of, you know, interact with him.
To some degree, I think he wanted to be seen, you know? Like, to be seen as who he was and to be seen as I don't want to say as the victim, because he didn't want to be seen as the victim. But he I think he wanted the accident acknowledged.
Yes.
And you know, I get what you're saying. Like, almost as, like, you want to be, he wanted to be seen as, like, you know, not, I don't think he wanted to be seen as a victim. I think he wanted the opposite, you know, like, I'm not the victim. Like, ha, I will come and prevail, even though, you know, I'm damaged or
even though you did this to me,
I'm still a person.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And I think that is something that, I mean, I've never obviously lost a limb, but I do have an illness that makes me different from other people, and it is very important to me that I want to be treated the same as everybody else, even though I'm different, because it is important, because it is, there is a mental thing you have to get past when you're told there is something wrong with you, or in his case, seeing there is something wrong with him. And I think that it is actually dealt with really, really well, the way that he keeps going back to Goldenloin and saying, why won't you admit it? Why won't you say what you did? And then he turns around to him, you know, and he says, you never said you were sorry. And the response is, didn't I? And I just, you just want to grab him by his big golden shoulders and shake him a bit.
I want to punch him in his little nose.
Well, yeah, that too. I would be nice.
Too nice.
Bless him and his little golden nose.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's something that is important to Blackheart, is that he is still seen, you know, as a person, because he is still a person. And maybe that's why he gets such a soft spot for Nimona, because, you know, he's taking in someone else who is, in a way, maybe damaged or sees himself as being damaged, even if that represents itself in shark form.
And I think one of my favorite moments actually is at the very end of the book, when the air quote doctor comes in and you know, is telling Blackheart he shouldn't be in bed, he shouldn't be out of bed, he needs to be resting, and says the monster injured him too, and he says, no, don't call her that, she's not a monster. You know, and that's just the end of the panel. There's no big reveal, there's no nothing until a little bit later, when the real doctor comes in and says the exact same thing, you shouldn't be here, you need to be in bed resting. And then he finds out that the first doctor was not in fact the doctor, and so, you know, inevitably was Nimona shape-shifting
and so drawing a shark.
Drawing the shark, which was amazing.
Drawing the shark was great.
It was great because, you know, like, she got to see that he really, truly, sincerely does not see her as a monster. Because he had no way of knowing that he was talking to Nimona.
Yeah, and that to me is a good counterpoint to earlier on in the book, when Goldenloin's talking to the director and he says, we've got it wrong. We've had it wrong all this time. She's not a little girl disguised as a monster. She's a monster disguised as a girl. And the fact that the two of them can have such completely opposite views, but, you know, come from the same background, I just found that a really nice contrast, the way that he says that at the end. And it does just make you go, oh,
exactly,
because he's very sweet and adorable.
He is probably the most complex and well fleshed out character in the book, I think.
Yeah,
I think that's probably why I've sort of focused in on him so much, because he does kind of carry the story, which is pretty impressive for someone who's not technically the main character.
I know, right?
I think that's unintentional, though. You know, I think that was very intentional and pretty well done too. Yes. You know, like, very well done in that aspect. So
yeah,
definitely. Earlier on, we were talking about or Jess, you mentioned about the audiobook and you said it had a full cast. And I said we were going to come back to that because there is actually an animated feature film in the works at the moment. It's being made by Blue Sky Studios, who did the Ice Age series, the Peanuts movie, Ferdinand, the Rio movie. So they've got like a pretty, you know, a pretty good history of films. And obviously, because I love a good dream casting, I have come up with casting for five of the main characters. Might have overdone it a bit. And it was something that I mentioned to both of you about doing it. So did you manage to come up with kind of a dream cast of who you'd like to throw their voices out for the movie?
Oh, I did five as well.
I did five as well.
That's good to know. I'm glad it's not just me.
Because once you start doing it, like, you kind of get into it. And then, like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, I'm like, I start thinking and I Google and I'm like, oh, no. And I'm like, for me, like, this is a voice. So you kind of have to, I'm not thinking about way people look. I'm really thinking about, like, what they're going to sound like. They're kind of, like, you know, the energy that they're going to put off. That like, you know, like, I was thinking with Nimona, I'm like, so they need, like, a little bit of an attitude, you know? Like, you can't just have some young girl. You need someone with an attitude, you know? So, yeah, no, definitely.
Who did you go with for Nimona, then?
I was thinking either Chloe Grace Moretz or Aubrey, blah, 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 I can't speak today, Aubrey Plaza, because they have that kind of, like, that voice and that, like, attitude, you know, like, if you needed an attitude, you needed somebody with, like, a little bit of a, you know, like, little snarkiness going on.
I like it. That was a good cast, okay.
Would you like me to continue? I can
No, let's go around for each character. Okay. Yeah, I wanna know who Roman went for Nimona, because I've gone a really different way from you.
Okay. Well, I apparently went entirely British, FYI.
Good to know.
Listen, that came to mind as well, so don't worry.
I went with Hannah John Kamen. I love her. I know she's a little under the radar potentially, but she's up and coming. She's the main actress in a show called Killjoys that I really love. And then she was just in Ant-Man and the Wasp. So she was one of the main characters.
We don't talk about that. I've not seen it yet.
I know.
I have not seen it either. I see it on Monday night.
Okay.
I'll see it in August when it comes out here.
Okay. Then we will have a conversation about it because, oh my God. But FYI, she's great in it and she's just great in everything. And I love her. And she does have great attitude, fabulous voice. She's just, I love her. So that, I thought she would make a good Nimona. So
cool. Oh, I know her. She was in Game of Thrones. Sorry, I've just googled her.
There we go. See?
Yeah.
Cool. I went a really different way on Nimona. Was that your one pick, Bronwyn, or did you have?
Yeah, she was my one pick for Nimona.
Okay. Cool. I went a really different way. I actually went for, I've got two options, and this is going to depend on your having watched any teen drama in the last few years. One of them, have you seen Girl Meets World?
No
resounding silence, tumbleweed. Okay, well, basically there's two main characters in Girl Meets World. One is the daughter of the original Boy Meets World cast, but one of them is her best friend, who is she's a character called Maya. She's played by a young lady called Sabrina Carpenter, and she is so sassy and spunky and doesn't take any rubbish from anyone. And I just, as soon as I was thinking who could do the moment, I was like, it's got to be her. She is just so feisty. And I think that she would really bring that sort of sass to it. And then I was sort of thinking, oh, what other teen dramas have I watched recently? And I'm going to go for my other choice, which is going to be Elizabeth Gillies, who played a character called Jade in a Nickelodeon show called Victorious, which I
know.
Oh my God, you know Victorious.
Well, I was a somewhat nanny for children for a long time, like in the winter times. So yes, I watched a lot of Victorious. I watched a lot of iCarly. I watched a ton of it. So don't worry.
So you know Jade then, the casual goth one.
Yes, obviously, the casual goth one. Yes, I'm in there with that. That's a great choice.
But I just thought she's just got the attitude. And when Bella was looking at my notes, she was like, yes, Jade! So I was like, okay, that one's a winner then. We'll keep that.
All right. I like it.
Cool. Right. So, who did you have next on your list then, Jess? Where did you go after Nimona?
After Nimona, I went to Blackheart.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, I had a hard time with him, but I feel that he has to be British. I don't know why.
Because he's a villain.
I don't
Yes, we
know.
get
Yeah,
it. We
I was
know.
kind of going like British, what you call. And I was thinking either like Benedict Cumberbatch or Tom Hiddleston for him.
Okay, get out of my head. That's
There you
exactly
go.
who I have.
Because I like could think of them when I was reading it. Like I was like reading it in their voice. Like I was like, yes.
That's
Oh,
not
great
where I
minds think
went.
alike. There you go.
I do not have a great mind in that case.
Oh,
Were those the same two you had then, Bronwyn?
that's exactly who I had. Yes, that's funny.
Awesome, awesome. I'm going to get my coat. I'll just come back at the end and do the wrap up.
It's okay. We still love you, Sarah. You know that.
I did have one Brit down. I put Peter Capaldi.
No, I can totally
Oh,
see that.
I know that he's Scottish, but there's just, I don't know, I just think he has got that kind of voice where he's got the range and the tone where he can be angry and he can be soft and he can often put sardines on pizza, which by the way is the true sign of a villain. And then my other option that I picked, I didn't actually know he was an English actor when I wrote his name down. I thought he was American, which is a guy called Paul Blackthorne. Who
Yeah, I heard about
I,
that.
yeah, I mentioned him on the last show from, I've completely forgotten the name of it now. Gosh, that's embarrassing. But he plays Quentin Lance in Arrow. And yeah, I just think that there's something about him. It also Dresden Files, that's what I'm trying to think of. It also helps that he looks a little bit like Blackheart.
Totally does, yeah.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
again, he's got that voice, he's got the tone, and sort of the gravitas to him that I just thought, yeah, he could do that.
Those are great casting choices.
Yeah.
Thank you very
Dresden
much.
is just as good.
Totally on board for both of those.
In that case, I'm going to ruin it all with my Golden Loin options.
Excellent.
Because
Go for it. Go. Do it. Do it.
one
Everything
of
is ruined forever.
Come on.
Tom Felton. AKA
Oh.
Draco Malfoy.
Oh, I did not
Yeah.
even think about that. That is
No, but that's
fantastic.
fantastic.
I know Golden Loin is supposed to be the golden boy, but for me, he's the bad guy. And
Exactly.
who does blonde haired bad guy but Draco Malfoy?
Oh.
I'm maybe taking this a bit too literally now.
No, that's brilliant.
And my other one, I am now really, really wishing I hadn't written his name down. Because I don't know how to pronounce it.
Oh. Okay, no, now we need silence for this because I need to hear it. So,
My
careful.
Danish is not great. I'm going to go with Nicolaj Coster-Waldau,
Ooh.
Mm,
I think
who's
I know
generally
him.
known as Jamie Lannister.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh no, that's it. That's who it
That's,
is. Like,
yes.
forget it. I don't even
Mostly
want to mention.
because he could read me a phone book. And I'd listen to
Exactly. True
it,
story.
Oh, just words coming out your mouth. Okay, I'll just sit here and listen. Okay, thanks. Yeah, so that was where I was kind of going with that because that they're both known for playing sort of baddies, and Golden Loin's just he's not the golden child for me. So.
Okay. I was really happy with my casting choice for Golden Loin, and now I'm not.
Until you just said that. Until that's it,
Sorry.
because now I can only think of him as Jamie Lannister, and that's it.
But like I put down Kenneth Branagh. Like,
Nice.
because I thought a Benedict Cumberbatch, Kenneth Branagh, Ballister, Golden Loin situation would be excellent.
That would,
Like,
yeah,
I
because
thought they would play off each other pretty well.
very, very sort of Shakespearean, very theatrical.
Right?
Yeah, I can see that.
But now I'm seeing,
I can only see that now.
Do you think we should contact the production company and just be like, look, sorry,
Maybe we should.
you kind of have to cast these people?
We've got this nailed now, I'm sorry, but
Yeah, no, I'm totally
Who
up for the plan.
have you got down, Jess?
Actually, because like I said, I was not thinking of Vision. I was thinking of like voice and attitude. I put Henry Cavill. because I'm thinking, like, he has that kind of, like, when he's talking as Superman, you know, like, that kind of, like,
he's smooth.
Like, I'm a super, you know, yeah, exactly, that, like, kind of, like, I can see him being very smooth and kind of, like, that regal kind of, and, you know, kind of sound and attitude. But now I just, no, forget it. Forget it, you win, that's it.
Did I ruin that one? Sorry. And do you want to give me your director in that case before I ruin anything else?
Yep. Start off, Jeff.
Me? You want me? Okay.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, you know, the director. No, I don't want to go first. You go first.
Oh, I'll go first. I had two for the director.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, because I was, again, I was very definitely in a place when I was casting, quite clearly, because my first casting thought for the director was Emma Thompson.
Okay.
The place you're in is called England.
Yes, clearly. Very clearly. But I also, and I stand by this decision because I think she would nail this voice, like, hardcore, is Gillian Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's a good one.
So I think Gillian Anderson would be a wonderful, wonderfully evil director.
Yes. Yeah, I can see that. Are you mentally prepared yet, Jess, or do you want me to go?
I'm mentally prepared.
Okay, go for it. Go on.
Okay.
Go on.
I'm good. Yeah. No, I was thinking along the lines, and, like, I think you had, like, the same of kind of, like, that, like, that, you know, just, like, that woman character that like movies that, like, bad guy, and I was thinking either Meryl Streep or Glenn Close. One of those, like, this could be,
yep,
you know, like, perfect.
Meryl,
like,
Streep can do everything.
Well, that's the thing. But I feel that it's that kind of role, you know, like, she could go in there. I was thinking, like, honestly, this is probably because I watched The Devil Wears Prada yesterday, and that's why she came into, you know, she does that kind of, like, villain, like, you know, like, you know, like,
her voice from that movie would be perfect for the director. You're right. Like, that.
Exactly. Thank you. Like, thank you. Laurels for spring, groundbreaking. You know? Like, that.
So I went in a totally different direction. I went more kind of bossy and snarky and slightly evil. So my two choices were Calista Flockhart, just because I watched quite a bit of Supergirl recently. And basically, not actually Calista Flockhart, but Cat Grant from Supergirl.
Yep.
When she's got that really snidey, sarcastic, especially when she's talking to Golden Loin, because he's, like, not following instructions. And my other one I went for was Viola Davis, using her voice that she uses for Amanda Waller in Suicide Squad, which is the only good thing about that movie. Don't at me. But yeah, when she's playing Amanda Waller, she's just in charge. She is the boss. And that kind of depth of her voice, where she just, whatever she says, she just expects you to do it. You know, you're not going to argue with her. So yeah, completely different direction on both of those. But Gillian Anderson, though.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. I'm going to assume that the other one that you both did was Dr. Blitzmeyer.
Yep. Yes.
Awesome. I have gone very random with this. I'm going to be honest. One of them Bella disagreed with completely. So I'm going to open with that one and try and redeem myself with the other. I put down Kelly MacDonald, who is the voice of Merida in Disney's Brave.
Interesting.
Because just there's something about the Doctor. She's just very calming to me. She's a very sort of peaceful influence, but also a little bit scatty. So that was kind of where I was going with that one. And then the other one is probably the most obscure British actress I could ever have come up with.
Are we
going
to Google this?
Yeah, basically. It's not going to help. Even if you Google it, you're going to have no clue. Her name is Honeysuckle Weeks, which is amazing.
Yes,
there was a fairly long-running TV show on ITV in the UK called Foyle's War, and she played a character called Samantha Stewart. She was kind of the sort of jolly hockey sticks, let's all buck up and get on with it, and there might be a war on, but let's keep our chins up. And she just has this real... she's just jolly, and bonny, and she makes you use words like jolly and bonny, and, you know, you kind of wish that she'd been your best friend at school, because everything would have been better, and she'd always have had sweeties in her pocket, and your mum would have loved her, and there's just something about her, and she just has this amazing voice, and you will all have to go and listen to her speak, because...
Her name is Honeysuckle Hero Susan Weeks.
Yes, it is. She's the most English person ever.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Amazing. That is amazing.
She has a sister named Perdita.
Yes. I can't even. But if you look at a picture of her, you can just see she's just got that kind of Enid Blyton heroine type thing going on.
That's true.
Have you also noticed that she's married to a man called Lorne Stormont Darling?
I have.
And
has a brother named Rolo.
I'm so jealous of these names because I have like the most, you know, I'm sure Sarah knows what I'm talking about. Like, how many Sarahs did you go to school with? Because I know I went to school with like 10 Jessicas. Like, everyone,
in one class, there were 3 Sarahs and 2 of us had the same birthday.
Exactly. So I'm very, I will take Honeysuckle Weeks, okay? I will take that.
Oh, so clearly you didn't grow up with the name Bronwyn. Just saying.
We've talked about this and I am still jealous and I love your name. So let's not even go there. Okay? Well, love
thank
that
you.
Name.
It took me an embarrassingly long time to learn how to spell it, and I still don't sign it because I dare you to try and write that shit in cursive, okay? I signed my name B, thank you.
I'm going to point out in all my notes, I do refer to you as Lady B.
Exactly.
I called you B before, too. I actually wrote, let's just wait and see what B thinks.
Even my parents call me B, so...
Oh, like, I feel like I've been let off the hook now. Okay then, B. who have you cast for Dr. B?
Well, I have actually cast... because you know how you said she has sort of a soothing voice, but is a little scatty? That's precisely what I was picturing as well. So I cast Ivana Lynch. The actress who played, why is her name escaping me? Ravenclaw.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I can see that. She could.
I can see that. Maybe
she could talk you off the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Oh, I like that one.
Nice. I like that one too.
I thought she had a good voice for that role.
See, I went older. I thought like older sci-fi, and I'm sorry. What comes to mind when I think older sci-fi lady is just Sigourney Weaver.
Oh,
yes.
No, that's excellent. That's good.
That's all I could think of. I was like, yep, I didn't even write down anybody else. That's it. That's all I put.
Sorry, Honeysuckle, you're out the door. Sigourney's coming in.
I mean, Sigourney beats everybody, let's be fair.
I was like, she's like the ultimate sci-fi lady. Like, she really is. I mean, if you think like sci-fi doctor, like, you know, that's it. It's just her.
Yep, totally.
There is no one else.
Oh God.
That's. I think actually we have between us just made a pretty good movie there.
I think so. They should hire us.
But before we get carried away, every movie has to have a soundtrack.
Yes.
And I have written down some names of artists and music acts, and I realised about 3/4 of the way through this list that I was reading Nimona as a kind of allegory for puberty, and you have to let the monster inside you out, because all of the songs I've written down, apart from perhaps one artist on here, all of them are terrible, terrible pop punk acts that I used to listen to when I was a awful, awful teenager. So I am going to make no excuse for the fact that the first band I wrote down was Panic at the Disco.
Oh, wow. Okay, I went in a different way.
Yeah, I think...
I went in a totally different way. So
I think most of humanity would have gone a different way. I've kind of gone down that route a bit. I've got Panic, I've got some Fallout Boy... I've got a bit of Sum 41, saw them live. I put down My Chemical Romance's song Teenagers, because the bit where Nimona's just kind of running around in the background, knocking all the guards down whilst in a rhino shape, and Blackheart and Golden Ornette are trying to have a conversation. I can just see that happening with that song in the background. And then maybe some No Doubt, a bit of Just a Girl in there, some Garbage. Yes! Okay, so vote for No Doubt.
Sorry, I'm there for that. That song specifically.
Yes. And then I thought for some of the quieter moments, maybe a bit of Beth Rowley, some Lena Marlin. My one not terrible act I've put on here is Janelle Monáe, just because she should be on every soundtrack ever, because she's amazing. And then also threw in just a little bit of Pearl Jam, because why not? Everything's better with Pearl Jam. And then I thought for those kind of those moments where like Golden Line walks into the pub and Blackheart's in the pub and they're kind of staring, I want some 80s power ballads going on there. And then just as they're walking off in the garden in the distance, that's how I want it to finish. Some big poodle-haired 80s rockers. And I'm going to go now, and I'm never going to make a podcast again, because I don't think I'm going to be allowed.
No, that was fantastic. I mean, really in depth. You went very, very in depth. You went scene by scene. You have it like written out. Mm-hmm. We are walking. We're playing the song. Like, you have already written out the storyboard. I'm telling you, they should just start paying us. If we see this movie and it has anything that we're talking about, they listened.
Yeah, yep. I definitely want some royalties.
Yeah. might just tweet it at them. Hey guys, we made a movie for you.
I'm not gonna lie, I went in a slightly different direction musically.
It's quite reasonable, to be fair.
I did not go as in depth as you. I have to admit. You know, everybody knows my favorite artist of all time is Tom Waits.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably squeeze a Tom Waits tune in there somewhere, but
rightfully so.
I really am just referring to a quote that is always attributed to Tom that says, "I like beautiful music telling me terrible things." And I feel like that quote applies specifically to the way I would structure, you know, the music for Nimona, because I feel like that really sums it up nicely. So the band that really came to mind for me was Purity Ring, which is actually a Canadian band, and it's a female singer. And she has the most beautiful ethereal voice. And so it's this really pretty sounding music. And she has the most sort of visceral language. Like it's real. Like there's this song where she says, open up my chest and pull my pretty ribs around you.
Hmm. Okay.
You know, and in describing a hug and then wanting to pull somebody in so tight, you know.
Hmm.
And it's this beautiful, beautiful sounding song. Like it's really, really nice. But all of the lyrics are very kind of graphic and visceral that way, like not graphic as in, you know, sexual content or anything like that, but just as in very sort of body focused and almost bloody.
Yeah, I can see where you're going with that one though, definitely.
You know, and it's a little bit, and again, the giant air quotes, monstrous.
Yeah.
In a very beautiful and very feminine way.
Mm.
And it really appeals to me. I love Purity Ring. Love, love, love Purity Ring. So that really struck me. I'd also probably throw some Portishead in there.
Nice.
Same sort of structure.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Again, feminine and strong and really kind of like, So that's kind of the way I was going with the music on that one.
Yeah.
And then for sort of the in-between bits, I was kind of going orchestral chase music. Kind of... like edgy Game of Thrones and acid jazz, you know?
That sounds amazing.
So
I'm down. Yeah, down.
That's how I would put the music together for that movie.
I like it. I like it. Did you go anywhere like either of those?
No, I went neither of the two of you. So
amazing.
We all have our own. I don't know if you guys have watched. I think from when we, but I don't know if you've watched Westworld.
Yes,
I know. I'm not caught up something. Okay,
don't
I
start the Netflix thing again.
I won't.
Yes.
No. It's on it. That's HBO. So.
I'm, oh, we didn't. Doesn't exist.
Oh yeah, that's right. So, but they do this amazing thing where they take current, like, pop songs from pop culture and they do them in, like, a Western, like, piano version. And
oh my gosh, I love it.
So, yeah, like, I want to hear, like, the same type of thing. I want to have, like, maybe No Doubt's Just a Girl, but done in, like, almost like a medieval fantasy type. You know what I mean? And that's what it is. I don't really want vocals. I just want. You know, just a good music, like, you know, and done. So maybe pop culture songs, maybe you can have like an AFI song, a No Doubt song, but like done in like a Renaissance-y kind of sound.
Yes.
I need that now. Can someone make that, please?
I know. Well, the Westworld, perfect. Yeah, the Westworld soundtrack has like blown my mind. And I don't want to tell you, they did one that like, I just fell in love with. Not in the last episode, but like two episodes before the last one. And I was like, oh, this is the best. I couldn't handle it. So, but yeah, just like that. That's how I want it. I don't want any, no vocals, just good old musical instruments and some good little pop culture songs like thrown in there.
Where you've gone with that one.
Me too.
Mm. I also like the fact that we're like winning completely different directions.
None of us had the same answer.
That's amazing.
I don't think we could have made that more different if we tried, actually. That was...
Occasionally, great minds diverge. That's good. That's what makes life interesting.
Speaking of great minds, we've had an email.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. It says, Dear Valhalla ladies, first off, a quick congratulations on your first show. Sadly, with only one in the can, I can't say that I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. On today's topic, though, I do have some thoughts, and hopefully they'll elicit a comment. I'm guessing that you know who this is from by now, but if not, it's from Bob.
Shocking. Shocking.
No way.
He says...
villain.
No, he's not a villain. He was very upset at being called a villain.
Villain. I know, I sat there with him. Like,
he's a villain in the way that Blackheart is a villain. It's like...
Exactly.
Yes.
Love you, Bob.
Bob, you're going to be cast as our Blackheart. Forget everybody.
So, Bob's put, Nimona by Noel Stevenson is one of my favourite books in the Talking Comics era, if there is actually such a thing, that is. For me, the book operates beautifully on so many levels, artistically and thematically, whether as a cracklingly funny adventure or a lovely parable on the power of friendship, it's hard to know where to begin. While in some aspects it's a classic fantasy tale with not only a heroine's journey but a villain's trek as well, and often for the same characters, Miss Stevenson has crafted a loving upheaval of many of the tropes of the genre by embracing them at the same time, all in the service of a timeless coming-of-age narrative, or perhaps more rightly, a coming-into-oneself story. To my mind, Nimona speaks eloquently to the nature of identity, not only how we see ourselves, but what effect can be wrought on our own self-identification or self-worth by how others perceive us and how we might, for good or ill, receive, interpret and act on that perception. Each of our main characters experiences growth through the story, and I feel it's a lesson taught by the example of Nimona herself, as her fluidity of identity, as cleverly portrayed through her shape-shifting ability, can speak volumes to those young or old, trying to find their own safe haven, despite the pressures to conform to societal norms. At one juncture, Sir Ambrosius Goldenloin describes Nimona thusly, "We assumed she was a girl disguised as a monster, but she's not. She's a monster disguised as a girl." At some level, haven't we all felt, or been made to feel, something similar at some point in our lives? Now, I'm not being funny, but should we just scrap the whole podcast and just put Bob's email out? Because that's brilliant.
I mean, honestly, I feel like he just succinctly said what we've spent the last hour saying.
Pretty much. He did it better, because he always does.
But he also asked us a question. He finished off by saying, how well do you think that Noel Stevenson's Nimona puts across the idea of the pure joy that comes in being happy in one's own skin?
Yeah, you know, that's a phenomenal question. Because I think that is actually perhaps the one jewel out of this book that we maybe haven't touched on yet, is that she really does show how much joy you can get out of just really being yourself and owning it and being happy in your own skin. You know, I think, you know, everybody kind of, as you get a little bit older and a little bit older and a little bit older, and things start to creak a little bit more than they used to. And, you know, just...
when you work out which one's your good knee and which one's the bad knee.
Yeah. You know, the grays start coming in and, you know, just things like that. You know, there's a lot of complaining about getting older and things like that. But I got to tell you, there are some good things about getting older, and one of which is letting go of some of the baloney.
Nicely done. It's okay. I can edit out the swears. You're fine.
I appreciate that. Letting go of some of the baloney of the societal expectations, you know, that the things that you internalize, especially as a teenager, about what you should be and who you should be, and
so much
who you should look like and what you should look like, and all of that thing, those things that end up being that emo teen life coach in the back of your head that tells you, you know, you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not smart enough, you're not reaching your potential, you're not doing enough, you're, oh my goodness, that voice can start to be quieter as you get a little bit older. And you can learn how to tell it to
stop.
STFU.
No, you're 110%. I think we talked about this briefly before we got on, where we were all talking about, like, us in the 90s, okay? Well, a little segue, like, you know. But
it was quite the time.
Yeah, I mentioned quickly, though, that I felt miserable in really the 2000s, in my 20s, when I was trying to be someone that I wasn't. I was trying to fit in. I was trying to wear clothing that fit in. I tried to, like, have, you know, I tried to be somewhat, what, you know, I'll use quotes, normal. Okay.
Maybe the outside world
considered to be. And I was miserable. Mm. I was a miserable person. I was unhappy. I wasn't happy that way. I felt like when I started to say, like, I don't care, and that was more in my 30s. Once you got, like, your 20s, I always joke, I say, like, your 20s are about, like, figuring out who you are, and then the 30s is, like, not caring about any of that.
Exactly.
So yeah, and now that I am myself, and I wear what I want, I dress how I want, my hair is how I want, and I do what I want, and I'm more my own person, I am a much happier individual.
Oh yeah. And Nimona just displays that perfectly, right? Like, she's just, when she wants to be a dragon, she's a dragon. When she wants to be a rhino, she's a rhino. When she wants to be a cat, she's a cat.
And some days you want to be the rhino, and some days you want to be the cat. And I think that's why this book for me is so important, that it is published by a teen fiction publisher, because that message is so important. And as a step parent, I try to get that message to my stepkids, that just because, you know, the quote unquote cool kids at school like something or do something, it doesn't mean that that's actually a good thing. I could probably just about remember the name of the cool kids from my school now, but I couldn't tell you anything about them, because as soon as I left school, they didn't matter anymore.
At all.
And that's a little bit. Yeah, and that's just so important. And okay, people that I know in real life and work with think I'm a bit weird, and they think it's strange that I'm, you know, in my mid-30s and I read comic books, because they aren't comics for kids. And they even think it's weird that I spend my Sunday afternoons talking on a podcast to people in other countries, because why would anyone care what Sarah thinks? But it makes me happy, so why does it matter what other people think? But if I was still a teenager... that would have been the worst. I wouldn't be doing this.
People in other countries care what Sarah thinks.
Aww, you're so cute. You know?
And like a lot of people care what Sarah thinks.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I'd go as far as a lot. I think that might be pushing it.
No, I know
several
a lot of people who care what Sarah thinks. I know a lot of people. So, and you know what? I know a lot of normal, quote unquote, people, and yeah, they do think that I'm a bit on the weird side. And but you know what? They love that about me, and they love me. And I've had some of my more normal friends pick up a comic book because I've said, hey, you know what? This one is actually really cool, and I think you would appreciate it. I think this particular story might appeal to you. And I've gotten people into one or two, like Saga. I mean, that
Saga.
I got my mother-in-law to read it on vacation. I was really excited about that.
This is something
that
will reach people, you know, people who aren't comic book readers, you know, that these are books that can cross boundaries, right? And there are things that can cross boundaries. You know, there are lots of different media available to people now, and there are things that are boundary crossing in that are available that weren't necessarily available when we were teenagers, and or maybe we just didn't know as much about them, or I don't know, maybe we just didn't have that sort of awareness because we were so caught up in just trying to make it through the day as a teenager. That sucks. But
and I think it's actually worse now as well, because not only are you a teenager, but you're a teenager in the world that has the internet and smartphones and social media and the constant use of technology. And
there's so much pressure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on a social media break now, because I don't want to be spoiled on the movie. But, you know, teenagers can't necessarily do that because there is the expectation of them. But for me, from a mental health perspective, that's a really good thing, because I'm just like, yeah, just not going to do that. Don't need it. Just going to cut off for a month. Because I am comfortable enough with myself that I can do that. I know that when I go back to it, the people that I care about and that care about me are still there.
Exactly.
But these poor teenagers that can't turn themselves into a shark when they need to, with or without lady parts, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that I wasn't a teenager with, I didn't have social media or stuff, you know, when I was a kid we didn't have cell phones, you know, we're all around the similar age, you know, I am so glad that that didn't happen, because I can only imagine myself at that point with this, forget it.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. Who needs self-esteem?
Oh man. I mean, on the one side there are positives, of course. You know, there, I was very isolated as a teenager, like geographically, and there was just nobody like me around. And I know that with the advent of the internet, you can find people who are like-minded because you're not
as geographically
isolated. Exactly.
I mean, we're all from different countries here. Like, we're nowhere near each other. So
there are definitely positives, as there are always, right? There are positives and negatives, but. The negatives are so hard to manage sometimes when you're a teenager, right? Because everything is just so overwhelming already.
And I think Bob really picked up on that. You know, when he asked that question and comments on the fact that we've all been there, it doesn't matter what age you are, you're all gonna have that point where you want to feel happy in your own skin. So yeah, thank you very much, Bob. Thank you for getting in touch.
Thank you, Bob. We love you.
Yeah, we do. Bringing it back. One other last thing that I did want to mention, just to kind of encourage a bit more reading and love of reading in the world, is we wanted to sort of bring in some other books that you might like if you liked Nimona, maybe because they have some similar themes, they're geared towards a similar age. In one case, looking at the list that I've got in front of me, because they're by the same creator. So I sort of threw together some ideas, and I'm pretty sure you two ladies have read some of these at least. The first one I put down was Lumberjanes, because... Yep. Noel Stevenson was one of the co-creators of Lumberjanes, and that led me nicely onto Gotham Academy, because yes. There was a wonderful crossover between the two, and they're both, you know, stories about finding your place in the world and realizing who you are and finding that there are other people like you in the world, and that you can, there are like-minded people, and also they're absolutely beautiful books and I love them both. I also put down Bandette, because I think for maybe some of the younger people that might be reading Nimona, I think Bandette is a great book to recommend, because again, it's about a young lady who is just so full of her own, she's full of self-confidence and she knows her worth. There is no lack of confidence there, and I think that's something that I really pull out of Nimona.
Bandette is fabulous.
Isn't it, though? I really want to cosplay as Bandette.
So good. Oh, please do.
She's just so cute. On the subject of cute and also cosplay, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Anybody who listens to Talking Comics knows how much Bob loves Talking Comics. Every time it gets mentioned, I'm driving along in my car, listening to the podcast, going, yes, it's so good. It is just such a lovely book. And also now there is a new book that's just started, which is an Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Ms. Marvel crossover. again. Yeah. It's brilliant. It's really, really good. Another Marvel book, which we will be coming... It will come up again at a later date on this show, which is The Unstoppable Wasp.
Nice.
Which it only ran for, off the top of my head, I want to say about 10 issues last year.
I think it was 10.
Yeah, but something like that.
There's one now going on.
Yes, it's coming back. Unstoppable Wasp is coming back. It's about... it's about girl scientists. That's, you know, that's all you need to know. Obviously, one of them has, like, superpowers. But, yeah, representing the girl scientists.
Yeah.
It's another really good one. Also, I popped down on the list Heavy Vinyl, which was, for a while, known as Hi-Fi Fight Club. And then my trade calls it Heavy Vinyl, a.k.a. Hi-Fi Fight Club. It's very confusing.
We call it everything. I think we called it, like, Heavy Metal Hi-Fi Fight Club, like, the whole time.
That's the one.
Like, on the podcast. Yeah, like, we just, like, called it all of their names. Because, like, we just, at that point, we were like, hey, like, come on. The guy from Fight Club was like, you can't have the same. Like, no one's going to think the two things are the same. Like,
and if they do, they shouldn't be reading.
Yeah, like, give it a break. But yeah, so now we just, I think anytime we've talked about it on Talking Comics, it's just the Heavy Metal Hi-Fi Fight Club, like, you just put everything in there together.
I love
it. Yeah, read that book.
Really good.
Again, you know, it's teenage girls, it's coming of age, it's finding your place in the world, it's finding people that you fit in with, and also it's, doing kung fu and solving crimes, so you know, pretty much everyone's experience being a teenager, really,
obviously,
clearly. And then just one extra that I threw on there, which is probably more for the older reader. It's not something that I don't think I would let my stepdaughter read. I mean, she's 15, she's kind of just getting to the age where she could read it, but DC Bombshells was a really lovely series set in an alternate past, in kind of Second World War sort of time, reimagining female superheroes. But it's written by Marguerite Bennett, and basically she took the Bombshell characters, who were essentially really cheesecakey versions of Wonder Woman, Supergirl, Stargirl, and she took them and she just gave them so much agency, and she went, oh, you want to make these characters into just sort of, you know, TNA, for want of a better expression? Yeah, I'm going to take them and they're going to kick a lot of men.
Yes.
And it's really good, and I love it. So, yeah, that's just a little list of books that maybe, if you like Nimona, you're looking for something else to read, maybe give some of those a try, and see how you get on, see what you think. Do let us know what you think, because we would love to hear from anybody who then goes on to read Heavy Metal Hi-Fi Vinyl Fight Club. Oh,
I think we might need to cast that one at some point, just so we can say it.
Yes,
over and over,
definitely. I think that's a wrap for this time. We hope that you've enjoyed spending some time with us again. We would love to have you back next time. Next month, we are going to take a look at a wonderful book with the snappy roll-off-your-tongue title, Glory O'Brien's History of the Future. This was written by A.S. King. My copy at least is published by Little Brown, from 2014. It's a book that I mentioned in our first episode. Gloria O'Brien, I said, is one of my personal literary heroes. We're all in the process of reading it at the moment. I think it's going to bring up some very interesting topics. There is a lot in here about coming of age, growing up, making decisions in your life, but then there's also coping with loss, how you deal with mental health, and there's a lot more to it than that, but I don't want to give anything away. However, it would be amazing if any of you want to read Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. If you do and you want to talk to us about it, anything relating to the book or what we've spoken about today about Nimona, or even if you just want to say hello, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere where media is social. We are at Valhalla Ladies. Or you can email us, as Bob did, ladiesofvalhalla@gmail.com. Also, if you look at our social media, you can see our very beautiful logo that our very own Jess designed, which I'm still in love with because it is gorgeous.
Indeed.
You make me laugh.
Oh, you're so cute. Well, while you're blushing, would you like to tell everybody where you can be found when you're not podcasting with us?
You can find me at Jarska for all the things, everywhere, all over the place. That's me.
Awesome. And Bronwyn, where can our lovely listeners find you?
Again, on all the things, you can find me at Shiny Baby Bee.
Amazing. Those places where you can find those ladies, you can also find me at Geek Country Lady. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for news, reviews and articles about comics, video games, TV shows and much, much more. We also have podcasts of every flavour, including Talking Comics. I get that wrong every time. Talking Comics, Talking Games, Talking Movies, Talking Valiant, Bendis Assembled and Adventure, the D&D podcast. Thank you once more, and we'll be back in your ears again soon. I'm assuming that we can say boob. I know we say we're family friendly. Like, kids just laugh at the word boob, right? That's okay. I'm not going to have to do a lot of editing here, am I?
Sorry, boob shark.
I don't want to come through here and bleep out every instance of the word. Anyway, moving swiftly on.